It is 7 o'clock. It's the January 22nd regular meeting. Ms. Nesbitt, if you would please call roll.
Alderman Jennings?
Present.
Alderman McCallum?
Present.
Mayor Pro Tem Bowles?
Present.
Mayor Sanford? Alderwoman Ramos?
Present.
Alderman Hoskins?
Present.
Okay. Item number 2, Pledge of Allegiance. Pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Texas pledge.
Honor the Texas flag. I pledge allegiance to the Texas, one state under God, one nation indivisible.
Okay, item number 3.0, special presentations. 3.1, engineering report and recommendations on water system, water system, wastewater system, and streets. This is Kyle Finley. Would you please let us know, give us your name?
Yeah, absolutely. My name is Kerry Lackey, and I'm with Cobb Finley Engineering. And to my right, Amber Hurd. She's also with Cobb Finley Engineering. And tonight we're going to be presenting the information that most of you have in front of you on the water and wastewater planning that we've been working with staff on over the last couple of months to present how we're going to kind of move forward in the future on planning for projects. So one of the main items that's in your packet there is the water system model. We did two things going into the planning, which was look at the water and the wastewater system. So in order to do that, we did sit down with staff and develop some new GIS mapping so that your system is current with a GIS map that also was used to put in the water modeling system. So I brought a couple of exhibits that we're going to go over. Three of those tonight, one being the water system as it is today, one also the results of the water modeling, which is an ultimate a water system that we want to plan to, and the other one is the wastewater system. This also helped us develop the water and wastewater capital improvement projects based on our conversations on what the needs are for the city. With that, just want to kind of show you this first map here before Amber talks about the water modeling a little bit. This is, and I'm sorry if you can't see this, but we do have a PDF we can provide all of you that you can blow it up and kind of zoom in on different areas. But this breaks down all the water lines in the city based on size. And so we also, in the GIS attributes, have all the materials of all the lines that are in the city as best that we know it. And so on the map here, it also shows how much, for example, 2-inch water line is in the system versus 3-inch, 4-inch, 6-inch, and 8-inch water line that's in the system. So that was important for us to have that information as a starting place for that water model. So Amber's actually going to talk about the water model that we did.
Good evening. So the purpose of the water model is to basically get a hydraulic representation of what is happening in the system currently and match that to actual flow data that was provided at the fire hydrants. We calibrated that data, and then the next step is to run different scenarios and options to see how we could improve the system. And the improvements were based on the fact that we want to try to improve the overall system pressure on a normal day that everyone's drinking water. Also look at firefighting capacity if there was a fire event in the city, how the system would react, and then kind of just look at different upgrades we could do at the plants and at the with the lines themselves to see how we can improve the overall system pressures. So that being said, we ran four different scenarios, and so each model has a physical attribute scenario, and so the first scenario is the existing system as it is. So we modeled the existing system.
Sorry, which exhibit are you talking about?
This first exhibit that's up right here.
Right, but we have numbers.
Okay, so that would be the first exhibit one.
Exhibit one, okay.
So exhibit one, basically where the first step, we took the existing system and modeled an average, actually a day from the summertime, so maybe a little more than your average daily flow, and then added pressure contours to the map so you can see the pressures of the system. Basically, that would be exhibit one where we're at around 50 PSI on the high side where we're leaving the water plant. So this would be the high parts of the system. When we ran a fire flow on this existing scenario, about 30% of the city could withstand a 1,000 GPM fire flow event. About a third of the city would be able to withstand a major event like that. And the major thing that's limiting that at this point on the existing system are the line sizes themselves. The 2-inch lines and the 4-inch water lines. So on the next scenario, which would be scenario 2, we said what would happen if we replaced the elevated storage tank at water plant 2 with the hydro-pneumatic tank. And the reason for that being, there's a couple reasons. Actually, the existing elevated tank has some structural integrity issues that people are concerned about, and also the height of the tank is what's limiting the existing system pressure to 50 PSI. So if you take that tank offline and replace it with a hydro tank, would that improve the system? And so when we did that, we did see a slight increase in the pressure, and that would be your exhibit 3. And we also ran a fire flow capacity on that. And that's what exhibit 3 is showing. If we were to take that tank offline, and what size water lines will we need to get 100% firefighting coverage for the city? So basically we would go all the way, take out those 2- and 4-inch lines and replace them with 6- and 8-inch lines.
So
then another...
The PDFs online, we can blow those up, and because I looked at those today, that's what we're looking at right now, right?
Yes.
So we can see, anybody here can see the actual fire hydrant pressures.
I believe so.
That you bought.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes, sir. The next scenario that we looked at was, we said, what if we decommissioned water plant 2 and only ran the system off water plant 1? What would that system look like? And so in that case, what the major thing that would need to change is that the surface water feed that we get from La Porte is being delivered to water plant 2 currently. So that would be the major thing that would need to change, is we would need to bring surface water to water plant 1 from the city of La Porte and have a take point at the water plant 1. And then we would decommission water plant 2 completely. And this was just a what-if scenario, just something we were looking at. So when we did that, we did find that once the elevated tank is offline again, your system pressure goes up a little bit because that height restriction is gone. And when we upsize the lines to meet all the fire flow needs for the city, that would be your exhibit 5. We ended up with more 8-inch water line in this scenario because on a fire scenario, when you're depending on one water plant, your water lines need to be bigger to push more water out to the very ends of the city. So it was a doable, it was an interesting exercise to see how it changed what water line sizes would need to be in place. Because basically you have one plant doing all the work, pushing from the center out. If that makes sense.
What is water plant two doing?
In this scenario, it's...
I mean, you said...
It's decommissioned?
Yes.
As in the model, we just turned it off. Pretend like it wasn't there. Just to see if it was contributing much of anything to the system. And I feel like it does contribute, especially in a fire scenario. It was harder to meet fire flow on the west end of the city with just one water plant operating. And then our last scenario that we ran was scenario four, which is a little bit of a hybrid, where we said, okay, we're not going to decommission water plant two completely because it does have value with the booster pumps and firefighting capacity. So let's just take the elevated storage tank offline and build a new one at water plant one. So the elevated tank would be in the center of the city, the center of the pressure plant, so to speak. And bring a second water line from LaPorte, so you would have a feed for surface water at each water plant then. And so whenever we ran that scenario, we saw the system pressure increase because the new elevated tank, we could set the height to match the booster pump capacity. The booster pumps at water plant one, their design pressure is 60 psi. So when we adjusted the elevated tank heights to match that, we saw an increase of about 5 psi throughout the whole system on an average day. And then on firefighting capacity, that is your last, I believe, exhibit 7. We again would upsize all the water lines to 8 and 6 inch, but in this case we were able to use more 6 inch water lines since we had two water plants online, so to speak.
And we did go back and forth looking at which lines could be 6, which ones could be 8, and kind of moving those around in the model.
Yes, trying to
kind of optimize.
Right, try to optimize where the 8 inch water lines are so that we could. So it wouldn't be as much of a capital expense, so to speak. And then on the last exhibit on your report, exhibit 8, these are little radiuses, and each radius represents a fire hydrant, an existing fire hydrant. Existing fire hydrants are brown circles. I'm sorry if yours isn't in color, but there we go. So the brown circles are your existing fire hydrants, and if we were to say that the fire hydrant can cover a 500-foot radius, we looked at where the gaps are in the city, and then we proposed the blue circles, which would give you full coverage of the entire city limits. And so we were proposing that an additional 17 fire hydrants would be needed to give you complete coverage for firefighting capacity.
Excuse me, could you show that to everyone in the audience as well?
Sure. So the brown circles are existing fire hydrants, and the blue ones would be what we're proposing.
Right, and the circles do overlap each other.
They do.
The blue is on top of some of the brown, but they do overlap each other.
And again, this is all online. That's where I looked at it today. So it is there if you want to look at it. Can you answer a question about Exhibit 6, perhaps Exhibit 7? If you look at Exhibit 6 on the left-hand side of my page, anyway, there is a, I'm going to call it a squiggly line because that's what it is. It goes like this.
Mm-hmm.
What is that?
Those are it's basically a pressure contour that the model outputs. And so in the model, there's little junctions all along these water lines, and it's testing the pressure at each of the junctions whenever I run a scenario. And then a way for me to visibly show you how the pressure changes on a map, it comes up with a contour line.
Okay, so like that's not like that's where our water lines go because.
No.
Okay.
So that's representing a change.
That's really a mess.
No, that's representing a change in pressure. So in the legend, the green squiggle line represents a 50 psi.
Okay.
Purple.
Yeah, it's not green on the others.
Oh, I'm sorry. So the squiggles have different colors that represent different pressure.
Okay.
So if it's a contour, what's on one side of the contour and what's on the other side of the contour as far as?
So we have them in 5 psi increments.
Uh-huh. So it's estimating that's where like 55 psi would be at. It's just an estimate based on the
It
kind of represents the same way
an elevation contour.
Gotcha.
Let's see
the other thing. Oh, and I just wanted to show one thing because we had talked about it. So the yellow line here is the existing Lepore surface water line that comes to Water Plant 1 on this side. And this is a proposed line that we used for the model to simulate where a second point would come in from Lepore. So this one's not currently there, but this is basically a map of kind of what an ultimate scenario would be for the water system.
In your modeling, why did you decide that the best place for the water tower would be here?
Well, in the first scenario, the existing tank is at Water Plant 2.
Right.
So the other scenario, we just wanted to see how it would change. What would the system do different if the elevator tank was at a different location?
Right, but I noticed that in your recommendations, you recommended that it be here.
Because
at Water Plant 1.
I guess it gives a better pressure to the whole system, being in the middle of the system. That was the recommendation because it's providing a pressure maintenance of the whole system. And if you just look, looking at the map, it is more centrally located in the middle of the city, this water plant here. Is that what you're asking?
I'm trying to understand why you decided it should be here versus on the other end of the city where it is now.
Oh. I think it would have benefit at either location. I mean, you do see a benefit of having an elevated storage tank when it comes, especially to a fire event. We did play with two different size tanks too, just to on the fire flow. We did a 100,000 gallon tank, and then also looked at a 250,000 gallon tank. And with a fire event, the 250,000 gallon provided a more stable system pressure during an event, a fire event. Did you have more water to fight the fire? On the 100,000 gallon tank, the tank in the model kept filling and draining, filling and draining, filling and draining throughout the fire event.
What was the total discharge for the simulated fire event?
We were using 1,000 gallons per minute for a fire, and then we looked at a 2-hour event.
So, okay.
So, based on the results of the scenario 4, we came up with the list of capital improvement recommendations for the water system itself. And then we prioritized based on, first, let's increase the average day system pressure. Second, then let's tackle the firefighting capacity issue. And so basically the first item would be to construct that second surface water feed line from Lepore, because that gives you a number of redundant benefits. Basically, you can have one plant down and still be able to provide surface water to the city. You can take water plant one or two offline if you had two surface water feet.
Sorry, Jeff. At what point do you want that feed line coming in? Because originally we had it coming in from 446 in, and then I heard there was another option.
Right. I believe there's been discussion, and Mr. Stahl had some discussions with LaFort, that there is a connection availability point, as we're showing this yellow line here. It goes up to, do you remember the name of that street?
I don't know the street, but there's a water tower. It's just
like Rock Line 140. Right there in Bayside Terrace.
Bayside Terrace, yeah. Right. And that's where surface water comes to one of their treatment plants.
And we had talked about that before. Mr. Wells said that he wasn't sure that was an option at that point.
So I believe the discussion, the beginning discussion has happened, and yet that is a possibility. So that would be the first priority. The second priority would be to decommission the elevated storage tank and install a hydro tank at that location, because that will automatically give us more pressure, because that height of that tank is what's restricting the pressure in the system currently. And then as you start looking at firefighting capabilities, start replacing those 2 and 4 inch lines with 6 and 8. And then the final piece of the puzzle would be to construct a new elevated storage tank.
Yeah. So in your package there, we have we put together 2 improvement plans, one for the water system and one for the wastewater system. And so, as I mentioned before, one of the main things is just making sure we got a good inventory of the system, so we know what we have, so we know those sizes, what's PVC and what's not PVC in the system. And then we also wanted to write down kind of what our conditions were for trying to do improvements, such as looking at deteriorated water lines, providing the fire protection, minimizing maintenance calls, of course, improving flow and volumes of service to residents, and then minimizing your emergency repairs that you would have on the system, which can be very costly. We did provide cost estimates for each of those for the water system, and we can answer any questions about those as well. On the wastewater system, similarly, and let me just switch over to the map here so you can kind of see what that looks like. So on the map, it looks very similar to the water system. Majority of the sewer lines in the city are in the street and follow the streets to there with manholes and clean outs and whatnot. So on the wastewater system, there is about 12.3 miles of gravity sewer line in the system, ranging from 6-inch lines and 8-inch lines, which is the majority of the system, up to the 21-inch gravity main that goes to the lift station that's located on the other side of 146. So that gravity main at the lower end of the system, coming across the highway over here. So again, we wanted to color code those so that you could see those, and also identify manholes and cleanouts on the system, so that that we could have an inventory of those. Again, we looked at projects that could be considered for capital improvements based on some criteria, deteriorated lines in the system, trying to minimize maintenance calls and improve level of service to residents, also minimize emergency repairs again. We've already discussed the line underneath 146 that if that line broke before it got repaired, it would be much more costly than trying to do a rehabilitation on it, and then also being on TCQ compliance for the sewer system for inflow and exfiltration. So on the capital improvement recommendations, we did keep the rehabilitation of the 21-inch sewer main by slip lining under 146. The other items there were just for maintenance and repairs. We feel like the next step after we kind of tackle that big project is to find any maintenance repairs and get those addressed quickly, and then take the older pipes that are the concrete pipes in the system and rehab those so that that they have seamless joints by HDP pipe. And then the last thing on there is we do have a number of lift stations in the city. A couple of them were either repaired or rehabbed as part of GLO projects. And so we did take a look at that. But we do realize that because it is a sewer system, the lift stations, the pumps, the wet wells that the sewer flows into, those things tend to degrade a lot faster because it is a sewer system and the gases and whatnot. So just want to make sure you're aware that there would need to be some planning for, in the future to make sure you continue maintenance and that pumps do have to be replaced and control panels do break down and stuff like that in the system. So we just want to make sure that was part of the plan also. So that's it in the wastewater. So if y'all have any other questions, we'll be glad to answer those this time.
Any questions from council, Mr. Jennings?
Yeah, I have a question from
Edward.
Let's say this is your budget. Your budget. You're the expert. You have $3 million to spend, perhaps. What would you prioritize?
Well, we did think about that when we came up with the priority list for the water system. Mm-hmm. But you mean overall water and wastewater?
Yes. Personally, for me, I got a flush toilet, so that's my priority, but,
Right. Yeah. So there is a mix there. You have balance for water and wastewater. You do come across entities that will spend a lot of money on one and not the other, and then the other suffers. So there does have to be a balance between both water and wastewater.
But it must come out.
Right, absolutely. They're both regulated by TCEQ, and they both have their own maintenance issues, so to speak. And so, I would recommend, do the top two or three water, do the top two or three sewer, whatever we can get, so mix and match in that dollar amount that you need. I wouldn't say focus all on one versus the other, because that, I don't think that's a good idea.
Alderman McCown?
No.
Alderman Ross?
Are y'all slip lining or open cutting? Like, what are y'all planning on doing on the sewer?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the majority that we've estimated so far would be by fiber system.
Okay.
Except for the 21-inch line, we were able to look at it last time. And it could be slip lined, which would reduce the cost.
Alderman Houston?
No questions.
Okay. Well, thank y'all for coming out. We appreciate it. Thank you for all the time.
Very much.
Thank you.
I reserve the right to call y'all later.
All right, moving on. Item 3.2, proclamation commemorating City of Schrager School Choice Week. This has the mayor's name next to it. Do we want to hold off and do it the next week? We'll do it now. We'll do it in the next meeting. Item 4.0, council reports and requests. There are none. Item 5.0, public hearings and public comments. Does the
the opportunity for the public to address council or comment on items which appear on the agenda. Time is limited to 5 minutes per speaker. Comments are to be directed to city council, and dialogue with the audience is not permitted. Council members are prohibited by law from participating in discussion and deliberation of items not specifically identified on this agenda. Okay, we'll start on this side of the room. The back row. Mr. Moyer.
Oh, you're just begging me.
You guys can go. Thank you. Unless y'all want to
stay. We're fine.
Okay.
I'll just stay.
Okay.
I'm Neil Moyer. I live at 1118 North Pepper Club Drive. One of the areas which I didn't read about.
I'm sorry, Neil, I couldn't hear you.
One of the areas that I did not read about in the Copenhagen report, or that I hear it discussed today, was about water intrusion into the wastewater system. We've had reports from any number of citizens at various rain events that they've seen water emanating from storm sewers. And it has not been, obviously, fresh water that's been coming out of those manhole covers. So like I said, I did not read anything or hear anything in the presentation that brought that issue before and tried to provide some guidance as to how that occurs and what extent it can and should be remedied. Moving along, Mayor Pro Tem Bowl has an item 7.8 on the agenda, and I'd be curious to know to what extent this incrementally goes beyond what the existing state and ordinances provide for, and what that incremental change is intended to adjudicate. Finally, I will make my appeal once more to Mr. Hoskins for him to take an opportunity to use one of these meetings to make a presentation on his petition for consolidation of Shore Acres with LaPorte. There's been very little or no information of official nature describing the nature of this consolidation would be, what the consequences would be, and the extent to which there is any interest in either the management of the city of LaPorte, the elected office holders of the city of LaPorte on this matter. So I again would like to request Mr. Hoffman to use the time that's available for council member reports to better inform citizens of Shore Acres on this matter sooner rather than later, so that I suspect there may need to be ongoing discourse on this topic.
Thank you, Neil. Anybody on the front row?
Okay.
All right, moving on. Item 6.0, administrative report. 6.1, city manager's report. 6.1.1, water outages during severe weather, January 17th and 18th. Mr. Stahl.
Good evening. I could make a comment about the previous report from the engineers. I have been in dialogue with the city of LaPorte, and most specifically the LaPorte Area Water Authority, and I understand that we do have access to a feed point for the Water Authority at the Humphreyville water plant, which is on Humphreyville Road, far to us here. It is considerably closer and much less challenging to run a transmission line from the Humphreyville plant to water plant number one here adjacent. So that's a very real possibility. Of course, all the costs would be borne by the city. Termination costs, termination equipment is the only thing that's not really firmed up. but those numbers are included in the engineering numbers that you have.
But that's a significant cost saving.
Significant.
Yeah.
And also a much faster project to...
As in more than $500,000
or something.
Yeah.
So we're really, really happy to have found that home. As you know, we have a little cool weather. Caused us some unexpected issues. Our water lines themselves held up fine. You know, we have a newly engineered constructed facility here. But there was some ancillary pieces of equipment that failed. We had water plant number one here adjacent to us. We had a chlorine induction line that froze. We circulate water through a line. We introduce chlorine gas. That is to chlorinate, supplemental chlorination, primarily to our wells. That line froze and broke, separated, causing us a water loss at the plant, which shut the plant down. Some of that equipment required us to have a contractor, chlorination company, come out and make repairs to that equipment.
That was Wednesday morning?
That was the 17th. That was the first of the two mornings. So we had two event-related failure relations, a little more stretched. So the first day that we had the outage
Tuesday morning, yeah.
First morning that we had the outage was caused by two different problems at two different plants. One was that chlorine line failure, which was really a water line, an induction line. So that failed and caused that problem. We had a service company come out and make that repair during the day for us. There was only so much we could do on that. The plant was shut down while that happened. At plant number two, which is the plant on Bioforest, we had a pressure line that monitors the pressure and feeds the controls for the booster pumps at that plant. That it's a water-filled line, and that line froze, which then created an ice block, which then fooled the system into thinking there was pressure when there was not. And so the boosters failed to come on there until we discovered we had a problem, and in the morning we went over and manually turned that on and then made repairs to that line. That got us back up with water, didn't completely resolve our issues until we got the chlorination equipment fixed. We then progressed to the next night. We had a perfect storm of things happen here that dominoed on us, as is often the case with a technology failure. The chlorination company came out and made the repairs to plant number one. In doing that, that chlorinator is primarily for the wells, and to affect the repairs, they turned the wells off. We were unaware that the wells were turned off. So we had no wells on at plant number one, which would normally not be a problem because we operate on surface water. Plant number two had the pressure line out, and so that was repaired, and it had an epoxy glue put on it, and they turned off that plant for that repair to not have pressure on the line, and they also turned off the well so the well would not kick on to put pressure on the line. On late afternoon of the first freeze event, the LaPorte Water Authority informed us that a flange on the transmission line that feeds Shore Acres had broken in the freeze, and they had a part coming, the flange coming, and they turned our transmission line off. And so we were not receiving any supply water, and we were told that that would be repaired by the end of the day. The public works director was called and told that the well was turned off at the water plant. Unfortunately, that's how it was said, and he understood that to be where the chlorinator was worked on, and that not to be an issue, when in reality what the employee was telling him was the water well at plant number two was turned off until that line cured. LaPorte did not get the part, and LaPorte did not replace the flange, and LaPorte Water Authority did not turn our surface water back on. And so in the wee hours of the morning, we pumped all of our tanks down.
The system called for wells, and all the wells were manually turned off. And so no water wells ran anywhere of our three wells to fill our ground storage tanks. And our ground storage tanks went to low, and then everything shut down. We called for water from the surface, but that was turned off at the other end. And so we just flat ran out of water on the second day. We didn't freeze anything. We didn't have a repeat failure of the failures of the first night, but we had no water. So until we could get the wells going and fill our ground storage tanks, we were out of water on the second morning. So they were two different events, two different types of failures. Largely, I say miscommunication, and I say, despite the fact that LaForte's line was out, it was 100% a short acres failure of us to make sure that everything was restored before the end of the day at the first event to make sure that we had the wells back in. Even if the wells at plant two, that one well had to be left off while that cured that line, this plant should have been 100% up. There was no reason for it not to be, except for at the end of the contractor's maintenance work where they turned off wells, we didn't follow behind them to make sure these wells were turned back on. So I know that they didn't anticipate that we weren't going to have supply water, but that's not the point. Everything should be always restored to full operating condition before we leave it. And so that was our failure on the first day that caused us to be out on the second day. I just wanted to give you that report.
I have a question.
Yes, sir.
I don't know if anybody else does, but let me ask. How are we going to prevent this from happening again?
Well, it's a personnel issue. I was visited by the Public Works Director and got a personal, not just apology, but a full acknowledgement that it was a failure on his part to make sure that it was all put back in operation. I think everyone understands how it occurred, and it's going to be a little more sensitive to make sure that when we have a contractor work on our equipment, that we're responsible, not the contractor, for making sure it's put back in service.
Mr. Jennings?
Mr. LeQuay, what are you going to do about this?
We'll assess.
It's your job.
I understand.
David's reporting, but you're here.
We'll have a sit down with him, and if it doesn't improve, then we'll make changes.
Mr. McCown?
I'm good.
Mr. Ramos?
I'm good.
Mr. Hoffman?
Hey, just a quick question about the employee thing. How often has that happened over the last 10 years that we've basically been in that kind of situation? Where the contractor comes in, shuts down the well, how often does that happen? I mean, we don't have any freezes, but we may have to have repair work where the contractor does it. You've been here long enough. How many times do they shut our wells down?
It's not uncommon for the contractors to turn some pieces of our equipment off while they're doing work. What is uncommon is to have a city crew out all night and then all day in that same time period. So, in the slightest offense, it was extraordinary circumstances just in terms of timing. We have never had an outage that was caused by that. We routinely have outside contractors work on meters and on pumps, and they do turn things off, and we do follow in behind them and restore that. This was just
an anomaly.
It was definitely an anomaly. And it happened.
Yeah.
And it did. You know, if anything, I appreciate the fact that those employees that were involved took ownership of it. You know, they weren't passing the buck that it's LaForte's problem or it was the contractor's fault. They understand it was a failure on what they did.
Nothing further. Thank you.
All right. Moving on, 6.1.2, Certificate of Obligation, Series 2018, Scheduled Events. Mr. Stoltz.
In your packet, back on about page 40, you will see four calendars on a single page. This is the Combination Tax and Revenue Certificate of Obligation Series 2018 schedule. You will see that I received this schedule on the 18th of January. It's a timetable of events was distributed to us. This comes from our financial advisor. This is the the firm and the individual that's responsible for negotiating the sale of our instrument and putting it in form. We also have legal counsel, bond counsel, the legal side, financial advisor is the sales side. So this lays out what the timing is. Shaded ones are ones where counsel will have action and activity. They were aware that you were going to get the engineering report tonight. I know the council wanted to have a comfort level with what projects you are looking to undertake. The two things that they need to move forward with the offering and putting the documents together is the general category of public expenditure. So they do not need to know what lines or what plants or what facilities it is. It can simply be water improvements, sewer improvements, street improvements, in general terms, and the dollar amount. So you are not locked into specific projects with the budget. You are locked into them being in those categories of improvements. And so that's important. So we've moved forward here with the drafting of that. The draft follows this meeting and discussion. Council will need to, by the 12th of February, which is our next regular meeting, be prepared to place into the notice what the dollar amount is. We have talked about and we have moved forward with this with them in a previous resolution of $3 million for water improvements, sewer improvements, and street improvements. And so that's the degree of specificity that's needed to move forward on Monday. If there's any changes to that, then you would need to address that at that meeting in 2 weeks on February 12th. That's a trigger point. Once you do the notice of intent, then there's a publishing cycle, noticing, and we start credit review, and you can see all the various little touch points that come down. A critical piece of this occurs on March 12th, which is having the fiscal year audit presented to council. The auditing firm with their first year audit ran severely behind schedule, as you're all aware. They missed the standard requirement date for having an audit. There's no penalty on that except for, and you've probably heard this from me in the past, the leverage on your audits are your bondholders. We had no bonds, we had no debt, so we had no leverage hanging out there. While we didn't have any bonds out there and bondholders to enforce audit schedules on us, now that we're looking to go out for a certificate of obligation, they are going to look backwards 5 years and look at those differences. And so we missed that date in the past. We can cure that going forward, since we're in a very strong financial position, by having a current audit at the time we do the issue. And so that is the goal, is to have last year's audit prior to the issue, and that will allow the financial advisor to get us a good rate, because obviously we want to get the best interest rate that we can on anything that's issued. If we can stay on this schedule and we can get the audit, and we've been pushing with the auditor to get that done by that date, then you will be in position on March 26th to adopt an ordinance authorizing the issuance of certificates. And it would take about 30 days for those funds to be delivered. And at the time of delivery, then you can start doing the projects.
Mr. Jennings, any questions?
Sure. Okay, so we've done our pre-work. Yeah, there's really nothing here. I sent you an email today. So on the 20th, next Monday night, we have to, there's nothing we need to do. This is just a schedule.
Right.
So on the 18th, it's going to be on the agenda to move forward again. This is a long process. We've approved it, what, like four times already?
Yes,
and then
on the 12th. And then on the 26th of March, we'll approve it again.
Well, the first one you're doing a notice of intent.
Right.
And when you do the notice of intent, then there's the publishing, and it goes out, and you're going to have, there's two ways to do that. You can go out on the market for bids, or you can do negotiated. And the financial advisor is working through which is going to be most advantageous to us.
Right. So we've already authorized them to do that.
No, you won't have authorized them until the 12th.
We have to do it again.
What you've done is authorized them to put all the paperwork together and get us to this
point. Okay.
All
right. That was my question. And then on the 26th of March, that is the first date that we will actually be able to actually approve this.
That's the date when you will accept the sale of the obligation.
Right. And in between that time, these guys are going, we're going to have to depend on them for the actual projects that we're going to do.
You set it up generally enough, it's okay. You don't have to have that in place.
You will want to work. Okay, so now we're going to go on parallel tracks. Mm-hmm. We have the money and we have the projects.
Right.
Okay. This map here is all about the money. And so the money will be coming. You're going to do the notice of intent, and then they're going to go out and they're going to negotiate to sell the obligation.
Right.
They're going to bring you a buyer. Somebody's going to bring you the money on March 26th. And you're going to say yes or no, that you're willing to take $3 million and pay this interest rate. To this particular, I mean, they'll have a deal. You're going to accept that deal,
okay.
And it's going to take you then 30 days to collect money. You have a finite period of time in which you are obligated to spend that money to do the projects. You can't just sit on that money forever. As far as the financial side goes, you have general categories, and that's all that's necessary. They don't have to provide anything to get the money. You're going to need them to tell you how you want to spend the money so that when on the 25th of April and we get deposited into our account $3 million, that you are ready to spend the money to do projects and not sit on it for another year doing nothing. Because we want to move quickly, particularly on the wastewater line under 146.
Certainly.
So in that particular case, that was an HGAC arranged deal. And on the date that you issue here and approve the deal, on March 26th, we can go ahead and contract to have that work done, knowing that the money is going to arrive in 30 days. They're not going to mobilize and do the deal within 30 days, that side of the project. So, and then between now and the delivery of the funds, you can hash out what your priority is and which projects you want to do and stack them up. And you can do them in order of spending the money so that you get the highest priority ones done that may, let's say, use $2 million and see how much you got left and keep prioritizing moving through. You don't have to pull the trigger on all the projects for the full $3 million on the first day.
So that's where we depend on Carrie and Amber to say, okay, this is what your priorities should be based on our modeling. This is what our financial things are, and we can buy them.
Well, I hate to say this to you, but
no.
They have done that. They have done their part.
I've seen that.
Yeah. And now it becomes a political decision because they can tell you from a technical perspective what the improvements will be for each one of those incremental things.
Mm-hmm.
But then it becomes a political decision on what council sees as the priority, taking that advice and what you want to do. And you're really not abdicating that responsibility to them to tell you which project.
No. I'm not telling you yet. But based on your study, that we'll take your priorities and we'll decide votes on which ones to do based on the. Right now, we've approved $3 million. If we go beyond that, then we have to have another vote.
We've
already voted, and at $3 million, I believe, would be the max.
That was in preparing the paperwork. You haven't really set the number you're stuck with until the meeting on the 12th.
Okay.
And when you do your notice of intent, that's when you are
to tie down the number.
Okay.
Thanks.
Mr. McCown?
No, I'm good.
Ms. Ramos?
I'm good.
Mr. Hoskins?
No. Thank you.
I'm good. Thank you, Mr. Salton. All right, moving on. 7.0 business. 7.1, consideration and approval. Thank you, I appreciate it. Consideration approval of resolution number 2018-291, appointing an acting city manager until such time as city manager is appointed. I put this on the agenda, so I'll kick it off. I'll make a motion to approve resolution number 2018-291, a resolution of the city council of the city of Short Acres appointing an acting interim city manager, making various findings and provisions relating to the subject, finding compliance with the state with the open meetings law, and providing an effective date thereof. Do I have a second?
I'll second.
Okay. I have a motion made by Bowles, seconded by Ramos. I put this on the agenda. This is the same thing that Mr. Hoskins put in at the last meeting. We now have Mr. LaQuay working for us. He's been with us a week.
Week and a couple of days.
I think we should try it before we buy it kind of thing, and now he's here, and Mr. Saul's been working with him in training, and so now, since Mr. Saul is retiring on the 28th of February, we should go ahead and see about appointing Mr. LaQuay effective March 1st. That would be the day after Mr. Saul retires. I feel that we need to have somebody in place so that there's no hiccups, there's no problems when the transition comes up. So, any questions, Mr. Jennings? Comments?
I thought we'd already done this. No, I'm good.
Okay.
I'm good.
Okay. Ms. Ramos?
I'm good.
Mr. Hoskins?
No, not really.
All right. Okay. If there's no other decisions, we'll move to vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Nay.
Okay. Four is Hoskins, Bowles, McCowan, Ramos. Against is Mr. Hoskins. Moving on to item number 7.2, consideration of action to adopt resolution number 2018-292, designating representative and official alternate to the Houston Galveston Area Council 2018 General Assembly. Ms. Ramos.
I think with the election coming up, we're going to need to, I don't want to say new representatives, but also. Oh, I'm sorry. I make a motion. This is my first time making a motion, guys. I'd like to make a motion to... How does it go? I'm so sorry.
I move to approve resolution 2018-292.
I make a motion to approve resolution number 2018-292.
Read the top part now.
A resolution designating the representative and official alternate of the Houston-Galveston Area Council 2018 General Assembly, making various findings and provisions relating to the subject and finding compliance with the open meetings law and providing an effective date hereof.
Okay. Do we have a second?
Second.
Okay, we have a motion made by Alderwoman Ramos, seconded by Alderman McCown. Okay, you have the floor, Ms. Ramos.
Okay, sorry guys. I think with elections coming up in May that we need to find two other representatives that'll also, you know, carry on. And I'm not sure if we've had any events where we've possibly missed that we could have been represented at.
Okay. Do you have anybody in mind?
I'm going to leave that open.
Okay. Mr. Jennings?
I don't want to be.
I'd like to look at it.
Can it be somebody off the council, or does it have to be a council member?
No, okay. We can appoint anyone. Okay. But there might be a motion and all that.
Right. Mr. McCallum?
I didn't say volunteer, I said I'd like to.
Okay.
I'd like to go ahead and nominate and recommend council person Ramos for this position, since this was per resolution.
Okay. We need a second for that?
I'll second that.
Okay. So we've got a motion to appoint Ms. Ramos
by Mr. McCallum, seconded by Mr. Jennings. Any discussion? We're going to take a vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, it's unanimous. Ms. Ramos, congratulations.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
All
aboard. Senator Pro Tem?
Yes, sir.
You have an alternate position to the bill.
Okay.
Also.
Now we have an alternate. Do we want to?
I would like to make a this raise.
Oh, go ahead.
I don't know what the Houston Galveston Area Council bylaws state as far as who can be represented, and I think we should research that. Maybe just leave the alternate open until such time as we know if we can appoint somebody that's not on council as an alternate. I also know that we don't have any funding to attend any of their meetings. None of that was approved. So we've not attended any one of the requirements. And that's just my recommendation.
Anybody else? Okay, we can leave it open until the next meeting to discuss replacing an alternate.
One other point of order is I think we still need to vote on the main resolution.
Yes, we will.
Mr. Hastall. If I could clarify, the city council of each member city shall select two of its members as representatives.
Okay.
So one member as the is the member, one as an alternate. So they do have two members of city council.
Okay. All right, so that leaves, because of due to the election, I'm not going to nominate.
I'll nominate Jerome for the alternate.
Mr. McCallum, will you take it?
I will.
All right. Okay, so we have a motion made by Mr. Jennings to nominate Mr. McCallum as the alternate. Do we have a second?
All aboard.
I'll second.
Okay, seconded by Ms. Ramos. So if there's not any discussion, we'll vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
No, the main motion.
Okay. Now back to the main motion. All those in favor of passing resolution 2018-292?
Aye.
Sir? Take a vote. All those in favor?
As amended.
Do we add? Okay. All those in favor, as amended.
Aye.
There we go, unanimous. Thank you, Ron. Thank you. Get bogged down when we start doing all these amendments. All right, moving on, 7.3, consideration and action to adopt resolution 2018-293, authorizing the execution of a re-rate agreement renewing and extending the interlocal agreement for TML Intergovernmental Employee Benefits Pool for the purpose of providing certain employee benefits. Mr. Stahl.
Yeah. In your packet is a re-rate notice and benefit verification form from the Texas Municipal League Intergovernmental Employee Benefit Pool. We budget for health insurance and death and disability for our employees in our budget. Our term on our insurance begins on April 1st each year. So we're 6 months into the fiscal year when we do that. In this last budget, I proposed and we adopted $6,090 per employee for these insurance benefits. At the time of October 1st, our cost for those benefits was $5,171 per employee. I used a number of 17.8% as a guesstimate of what the insurance would go up. So we would have 6 months at the old rate and 6 months at a new rate. And so this re-rate does increase the employee benefit cost from $431 a month to $496 a month, so a $64.64 increase, which is a 15% increase. The amount again in the budget was $6,090 per employee. Taking the first 6 months at the old rate, the next 6 months at this new rate, our total cost for the fiscal year, this budget year, is $5,559. We will come in $531.12 under budget for every employee. And so this is a 15% increase in the employee insurance cost. Which we have fully budgeted for. I would note that the dental, voluntary vision insurance, basic life and the disability insurance has zero increase. And so my recommendation is that we accept his re-rate. It's well within what we budgeted, and we move on.
We have a motion.
I move to approve resolution 218-293, a resolution authorizing the mayor to sign a TML intergovernmental employee benefit pool re-rate notice and benefit verification form setting forth full-time city employee benefits authorized by city council, effective April 1st, 2018.
Okay, we have a second.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion made by Alderman Hoskins, seconded by Alderman McCallum. Do we have any discussion, Mr. Jennings?
Yeah. Mr. Stahl, are you saying that we're increasing the employee contribution by 15%?
No. The cost of the city, we pay 100% of employee health insurance, and our cost is going up 15%.
Okay, and we already budgeted. Okay, I thought you said the employee amount.
There's no impact to the employee whatsoever.
Thank you.
Unless they take family insurance, which they pay for themselves,
sure,
there is also a 15% increase there. We have no employees presently taking advantage of a family member. And we also have supplemental dental that the employees can give for family, which we do have people taking, and that is a zero increase.
Thank you. Mr. McCallum?
Well, I'm glad to see that the City of Shore Acres is still with TML. Being an ex-employee with the City of LaFort, we had TML. They took very good care of the employees, so I'm glad to see that we're still with them. So, good job, Mr. Stahl.
Ms. Ramos?
I'm good, thank you.
Mr. Hoskins?
No questions.
Okay. All right. We'll move for a vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Okay. Thank you. Passes unanimously. Moving on, 7.4, consideration and approval of ordinance number 2018-293, ordering the City of Shore Acres 2018 City Officers Election, designating election precincts and polling places, providing the use of voting machines, appointing election officials, providing for method and dates of early voting, providing for an early voting ballot board, providing for return and canvass of votes, and set of elections, providing for notice, and providing for filing deadline. Mr. Stahl?
I'll go ahead and move to approve ordinance 218-293, ordering a city officer's election to be held on May 5th, 2018.
We have a second.
Second.
All right, we have a motion made by Alderman Hoskins, seconded by Alderman McCallum. Is there any discussion? Okay, we'll move to vote. All those in favor?
All right.
All right, thank you. Passes unanimous. 7.5, consideration and approval of ordinance number 2018-294, appointing the election judge, alternate judge, election clerks, early voting balloting board, and marshal for the May 5th, 2018 general election. We have a motion.
I'll move to that we pass ordinance 218-294, an ordinance appointing the election judge, alternate judge, election clerks, appointment of a bilingual voting clerk and marshal for the May 5th, 2018 general election.
We have a second.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion made by Alderman Hoskins, seconded by Alderman McCallum. There's no discussion?
There is
discussion. Okay, thank you. Mr. Stahl.
You'll find on the second page of section 5, there's a blank. At the time this was prepared, we did not have the bilingual election clerk identified, and I would ask that you amend the resolution to enter a name there, and the name would be Sylvia Ramirez, R-A-M-I-R-E-Z. Sylvia Ramirez is the mother of Connie Ramirez, a resident, a council member, and she will be available on election day, and as you know, we pay $25 for being available, and $21.96 per hour that we use them, and we have never used the bilingual clerk.
Okay.
Okay. I'll move that we amend the ordinance to add Sylvia Ramirez in section 5 as a bilingual election clerk.
And we have a second?
Second.
All right, we have a motion to amend section 5, adding Sylvia Ramirez, made by Alderman Hoskins, seconded by Alderman McCallum. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. It's unanimous. Okay, we're back to the main motion. Motion to vote on resolution number 2018-294 as amended. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Passes unanimous. 7 points.
Does Ms. Ramirez speak Texican?
Not required, by the way.
Oh, okay.
7.6, consideration approval of ordinance number 2018-295, ordering a special election to be held on the 5th day of May 2018 for the purpose of considering a ballot proposition on whether the city of Short Acres, Texas shall be consolidated with the city of LaPorte, Texas, providing for election officers, designating the place and manner of holding said election, designating the early voting polling place, designating the early voting clerk, providing for the posting and publication of notice, providing for a severability clause, and providing for an immediate effective date. We have a motion.
I move to approve ordinance 218-295, an ordinance of the City Council of the City of Short Acres, Texas, ordering a special election be held on the 5th day of May 2018 for the purpose of considering a ballot proposition on whether the City of Short Acres shall be consolidated with the City of LaPorte, Texas, providing for election officers, designating the place and manner of holding said election, designating the early voting polling place, designating the early voting clerk, providing for the posting and publication of notice, providing a severability clause, and providing for an immediate effective date.
We have a second. Okay, we do not have a second.
Yeah, I'll second it.
All right. We have a motion made by Alderman Hoskins, seconded by Alderman James.
It's a legitimate petition. Not in favor of it, but hey. Yeah. Mr. Hoskins wants to get rid of the city, then
try,
I guess. Whatever.
All right. That being said, all those in favor?
All right.
All those opposed?
Nay.
Nay.
So.
Okay. Can I get a division? Call for a division.
Call for a division.
We should say a record of who voted for what.
Okay. Yes, sir. We've got a record. Mr. Alderman Hoskins voted for. Against was Ms. Ramos, Mr. McCallum, myself, Mayor Pro Tem Bowles, and Mr. Jennings abstained.
Okay. And being on the losing side, I get to make a comment. This whole ordinance, all it does is put it on the ballot. It basically gives the citizens the right to vote on this. And it was a legitimate petition. And I think for council to sit here and say that, you know, you don't want to let the citizens decide, it's not for us to decide. It takes the power totally out of council. So, all right. Enough said on that.
Moving on, 7.7, consideration approval of ordinance number 2018-296, designating the official city newspaper. Mr. Stahl.
We were required by state statute this year, as if it was time convenient, to identify the newspaper that will be the official newspaper. We publish all of our legal notices, such as penalty clauses for ordinances and seeking bids and other official business. And this will continue our current relationship with Barry Observer, which is a more economical opportunity for us than other newspapers.
Do we have a motion?
I will move to approve ordinance 2018-296, an ordinance designating the official newspaper of the City of Short Acres, Texas, and repealing all other ordinances in conflict.
We have a second.
I'll second.
And we have a motion made by Alderman Hoskins, a second by Alderwoman Ramos. Do we have discussion? Okay, let's move to the vote. All those in favor?
All right.
Aye. Opposed?
Nay.
Nay.
Okay. Passes. Alderman Hoskins, Alderman Bowles, Alderwoman Ramos. Opposed is Alderman Jennings and Alderman McCallum. Passes. Okay. Moving on, 7.8, consideration approval of ordinance number 2018-297. Amending Short Acres City Code, adding Chapter 38, Article 3, Section 38 through 101, through 38-106, regulating the residency of sex offenders, prohibiting residents and apprentices of children commonly gathered, providing affirmative defenses, providing penalties for violations, providing a severability clause, making various findings and provisions relating to the subject, finding compliance with the open meetings law, providing an effective date hereof. I put this on the agenda, and I'm making motion to approve ordinance number 2018-297, an ordinance amending the Shorter City Code, adding Chapter 38, Article 3, Sections 38-101 through 38-106, regulating residency of sex offenders, prohibiting residence near premises where children commonly gather, providing affirmative defenses, providing penalty for violation, providing a severability clause, making various findings and provisions relating to the subject, finding compliance with the open meetings law, and providing an effective date thereof. Okay. We have a second.
I'll second it.
Okay. We have a motion made by Bowles, seconded by Hoskins. I was asked about, in our ordinances and such, we do not have anything that keeps sex offenders away from the police and our children in the city. I was really surprised to see that. Previous law allowed 500 feet. This state law, Mr. Moyer was asking, we can now push it out to 1,000. So since I wanted to make the change, but finding that we do not have a law to go from 500 to 1,000, we're making it 1,000 feet. It's not retroactive, but you know, moving forward, we can try to protect our children. So, any questions? No questions?
Well, no questions. Okay. I have a comment.
Go ahead.
This should be falling under the Penal Code, Section 341.906. This is actually a new law that was passed this last legislation. The City of Shorter is actually, we signed a resolution that we sent to DML, who then passed it on to the state legislature, where we're in support of this new law that the state passed. And really what it does is it gives general law municipalities this power. It's a power we never had before. Home rule cities had the power. But in that code, in that section, and I don't know if you ran this by an attorney or not, but Section E says, the ordinance shall establish procedures for a registered sex offender to apply an exemption from the ordinance, to apply for an exemption. And I don't see anything in this ordinance that describes the procedures for what we're trying to do here. So if you could give me a little more background on how this ordinance was written. I mean, I'm all in favor of it.
This is a LaPorte ordinance. This is the exact same ordinance as LaPorte.
Okay, I got you. LaPorte, being a home rule city, has the power to do that. As a general rule city, as a general law municipality, we have to follow Section 341.906. So maybe we could postpone this and get the wording in our ordinance correct. Would be my suggestion. And get a little more clarification in terms of how we're going to apply this new law as it applies to us.
We can do that. I'm in agreement with that. So
okay.
Let's just move this to the next meeting, man.
Okay, and I'm all in support of it anyway.
Well, thank you. Thank you for noticing that. I appreciate that. Okay. Oh, looky there. Item 8.0, adjournment. Do I have a motion to adjourn?
Motion.
You have a second? All right. All those in favor?
All right.
There we have it. Good night. Thank you all. Appreciate you for coming.